Soundproof Podcast.
Hello.
Hi.
Hola.
Hello.
Hey.
Well, hello. I'm Miyuki Okiranta, and welcome to the Soundproof Podcast from RN's Creative Audio Unit. Let's start with musician Jim Denley, instructing a studio audience in our final Liveproof performance of the year.
To get like 15 or 16 people into Body Space B, you're obviously going to have to like really squeeze in. And what I would really like you to do, this is kind of like those silly things where people used to cram into a mini.
Or a phone box.
Or a phone box, yeah. So you will become kind of baffled to the sound. So I'm kind of interested in if we can kind of hear the bodies. So we'll definitely hear you come into the space and say hi. So like we'll hear your voice, and that voice will sort of situate you in the stereo space.
As you may know by now, for each Liveproof, we ask an artist to adapt a live performance for radio and bring this to a small audience in the studio and a much larger one over the airwaves. For our inaugural series, Jim Denley, one of Australia's foremost improvisers and a longtime radio maker, asked artists Nick Keys, Amanda Stewart and Mel Herbert to perform. For the finale of the series, Jim chose to put himself in the radio studio. But instead of playing to a politely seated, quiet audience, Jim instructed those present to get up out of their chairs and slowly close in on him as he performed. So why herd an audience into such a small space? CAU producer Sophia Lerner asked Jim to elaborate.
Yeah, so I guess there was a quite specific score, which didn't have that much to do with me, but was for the bodies or the participants, the audience who were there. So they had instructions that after 2 minutes they were allowed to come from one space, which is kind of behind the microphones, right into a space very close to me, which is between myself and the microphones. And they could do that over a 6 minute period. And when they come into the space, they just give a short greeting.
Hi.
Hola.
Hello.
So eventually you had like 15 people standing in a semicircle very close to me and between me and the stereo pair of microphones. So they all had to arrive by 8 minutes. And then there's a sort of period of 2 minutes where they're all sort of standing there extremely close to each other and to myself. And then they're free to sort of say goodbye and to leave the space and go back behind the microphones.
I know your work generally responds to space in a very complex and interesting way.
I guess a lot of my kind of rationale for thinking about the piece has to do with the spaces that I really enjoy playing with normally. So my kind of ideal or my favourite place is actually a space or a number of spaces in the Butterwang Mountains, southwest of Nowra. And they're quite sort of architectural, the spaces, because there's lots of mountainous rocks everywhere. So often you have sheer rock walls and caves, and there's quite a lot of reflective surfaces. So they're not dissimilar to rooms in some ways, but these spaces in the Butterwangs are kind of much more curved surfaces, and if there is a kind of a rock wall, it's usually very weathered, and so you have kind of pockmarked kind of little alcoves everywhere. So you get these kind of reflective architectural sort of spaces, but very kind of rich and complex. But often there's hundreds or thousands of trees around as well, which are also reflective spaces. So you know, the acoustic spaces I like playing in are not studios. They're not rooms. They're actually kind of way more complex, a lot more rich. If I move the saxophone a few inches to one side, you suddenly get like a reflection off the large tree that's just 10 meters from you. But if I move to the left, I'll be hearing something completely different. But it's a very complex and subtle difference. So I guess when you asked me to do this thing in the Studio 256, which I knew, my initial thought was, oh my God, it's just like it's a box. It's kind of fairly dry. That doesn't have much acoustic. What the hell can I do? You know, how can I make this space spirited and interesting? And then, you know, because Soundproof are doing these live proofs with an audience, then the thing was, well, okay, the people, they can become like something that moves and shape the space in some way. So I've been reading a lot about what David Ahern wrote about his group Teletopa, and there was this idea that they would change the space, that the music would be sort of controlled, or that one parameter in the music would be like walls changing. And these days you get concert halls which can sort of change acoustics, but he was sort of suggesting that should become content in the music, that during the performance you would actually change the acoustic. And I mean, when you think about it, in 1971, the opera house had just been built, and so they had those big clouds above the concert hall in the Sydney Opera House. So I remember as a kid being completely intrigued by that idea as well, that you could move these big perspex clouds above the orchestra down and change the acoustic. So maybe Ahern had seen that and had this idea that in the future, like in their improvisation group, they'd change the acoustic in a space. I'm kind of rationalizing after the event, but like when I was sort of trying to dream up this piece, looking back at it now, I'm thinking, okay, well, I just read all this stuff where Ahern's been talking about changing the acoustic space while the music's going on. I think I've probably been influenced by what he was writing, because I think the body's kind of moving really close to me do that in this piece, that they completely change the acoustic of and the way the saxophone works in the room and hence into these microphones that then become the radio space. Maybe it's a different sort of listening where I'm asking the radio audience to not necessarily listen to the music or the kind of obvious signal, but to listen to what happens to the signal when these bodies sort of move in front of the microphones.
Jim Denley speaking there with Sophia Lerner about our final live proof performance for the year. Here's Shadow Speak Mob by Jim and Friends.
Thank you.
Hola.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, gun.
Hello. Until next time.
Hasta la vista.
Gotcha.
See ya.
Hi. Ciao.
Goodbye.
Vediamo.
A bientôt.
See you later.
Thank you.
Shadow Speak Mob by Jim Denley and a very willing studio audience. Let's pick up the chat between Jim and CAU producer Sophia Lerner, which you heard some of before the piece.
It was also an incredibly intimate performance experience to have the audience standing so close to you in a position that, you know, normally only you'd find microphones that close to the performer, not the audience. And, you know, we think of radio as being quite an intimate medium because here we are in the listener's ear. Would you like to say a bit about what that was like for you as a performer?
I was aware of the movement and the bodies around me, but I think I was like zoning in on the sound so much that it didn't sort of worry me or affect me in any sort of way, like other than it being extremely interesting, and then just going, okay, how am I now going to react? Can I hold this thing long enough, this breath? Or, you know, because certain things that I'm doing, your jaw and your kind of lips get really tired. And so, you know, just trying to sort of pace yourself. So this sort of technical things and then the sort of a deep listening space. And like, truthfully, I don't think I found it kind of socially weird or, I mean, the people there may have, like, the audience.
But I think that's one dimension of an intimate space is that you don't feel socially weird.
Yeah.
You created a very intimate performance experience.
To me, there's something a little bit wrong about concerts in our age that, because none of us really believe in God much. To me, like, if you take the kind of spiritual out of music performance, then all you've got left is kind of this dialogue between an audience and performers or a performer. And it can just sort of then come down to sort of mindless virtuosity. And then mindless virtuosity is sort of, I don't know, just like it's depressingly anthropocentric, like this human being sort of extolling or, you know, getting off on the kind of genius of the species or something, like, aren't we clever? And that seems to me like the massive problem with art museums in our age as well. Like, if you kind of take the spiritual out of these places, if they're just like spaces to hang the works or, you know, present the works of human beings, and we all kind of go along and sort of go, well, isn't this person a genius or isn't this person incredibly clever? There's something kind of incredibly bereft spiritually and also then politically to me. Like, if in this age we have to go beyond thinking about ourselves and human beings and to think kind of in a larger sense of what human beings are in the world, then kind of this self-referential, aren't we clever, aren't we virtuosic, it just seems really spiritually and politically inept to me.
This comes back to what you were saying about the way that you work with and in places. Maybe rather than human genius, you're working with the genius loci.
Yeah, I guess that's my point, that if it's just about this guy who can play the saxophone and he's worked really hard at it and, you know, I mean, obviously can do things on the saxophone which other people don't necessarily do, and then, that, I mean, to me, that's just not enough. It's actually a bit icky. So then all I can do in a space like Studio 256 is try and elucidate space and sort of make it less about the performer and the music, which is like this human construct, and more about space itself and distance and space and air isn't all about us. But then I guess if you kind of involve more people than just the singular artist in the work, it's also kind of broadening the thing out to be less about individualism.
And to activate that social dimension of the audience in the space as well as part of the space.
Yeah, I get a little bit worried that it is actually quite, you know, I mean, it's a composition and I'm asking the audience to sort of do a specific task and they have certain rules. And I've always been like really uncomfortable with like giving other musicians rules. Like I usually like to work in a way which is like collectively authored. So I had to sort of cope with that, sort of the dark side of myself as a kind of a fascistic composer, sort of telling them what to do. But I don't know, it just seemed that there was an opportunity to kind of involve a group of people in the work and for them to be active. And that seems really important to me somehow.
And we hear their voices as voices on the radio addressing the mics as they go past, which situates them in yet another space, which is the radio space that often begins with, "Hello, you're listening to Soundproof."
You are indeed. And that was Jim Denley with his live-proof performance, Shadow Speak Mob. This instalment was produced by Sophia Lerner and recorded and engineered by Louis Mitchell and Andrei Shabunov. You can find links to more of Jim's work and more live-proof on our website, abc.net.au/rn/soundproof.